swirling, but I wanted to get together and talk to you about today. Today is Zayin Adar. And Zayin Adar, either Adar Aleph or Adar Beis, in certain communities, is a very important day that I want you to be aware of, just to be aware of what happens, and also one day to think about a very important chesed, because we like to talk about not just important challenges and opportunities at the age of 18 and 19, but at the age of 25 and 30 and 35 and down the line. So Zayin Adar is the yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu, and it's a day in which many communities across the world, again this year some do it Zayin Adar Aleph, typically Zayin Adar Beis, but by Zayin Adar Beis we'll already be in the Purim mode, so I'll have other things to talk about. The Chevra Kadisha celebrates its work in the community and gets together for a very special day in almost every community across the world. Now, so what is Chevra Kadisha and what do they do and what has their lore been, because it's larger than just burying dead people. So Yaakov, of course, is the person to first phrase the term chesed v'emes. He asks Yosef chesed v'emes, and Rashi interprets here not chesed v'emes, but chesed shel emes, because this is the final and purest chesed any person can perform for another human being. Anytime you perform chesed for someone else, you are inherently gaining some benefit, some reciprocal benefit, even if it's not material. At the very, very least, you're seen in a certain way. That person may owe you. The community sees you in a certain way. This is a pure, selfless chesed shel emes. So Yaakov already is aware that he's asking Yosef for the purest distillation of chesed. And that purity was always traditionally felt on two levels, not just in terms of lack of expectation from the recipient and the beneficiary, but also the lack of any financial reward. I just want to read to you a medrash about Moshe Rabbeinu. I hope it came through. I'd put it on my computer, and it hasn't synced yet. Right, here's the medrash. Chacham Lev Yikach Mitzvos. It's a pasuk in Mishlei Perek Yud. Zeh Moshe. Who's the Chacham Lev? That's Moshe Rabbeinu, who acquires mitzvos. B'sha she'asku kol Yisrael babiza, the day that they left Mitzrayim, all of Am Yisrael, they were immersed in gathering the klei chesed, the klei zav, usmalos, the riches, their deserved compensation for 200 years of slavery. But Moshe was Osek Beatzmos Yosef. The first couple of psukim in Parshas Beshalach, Veikach Moshe Asmos Yosef Imo, Kiash Beash Bi. Over Shosho, Kol Yisrael Notzim Esakesev Esazav, they were carrying the loot. Moshe was concerned with the Arona Shal Yosef. Amr Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chesed Gadol Asisa. Moshe, you perform the selfless chesed at financial cost, or at the very least, without expecting financial remuneration, because you weren't able to gather your loot and gold. I will personally attend to your burial. So ironically, and this is a very interesting irony, throughout the generations, it was always expected that people performing burial rites would not be paid. I'll talk about their standing in society. Fortunately slash unfortunately, in the modern state of Israel, we can no longer have it be performed on a voluntary basis, as it has always been performed. It had to be institutionalized because it's part of a country. It has to be coordinated because it's at a national level. So we have the schus now to have to deal with Chevra Kadisha at a national level. Unfortunately, what's happened is it has to become institutionalized for pay as part of government-supervised organizations. And there is, unfortunately, big money today in Chevra Kadisha. But that's, on the one hand, a sad and unfortunate occurrence. On the other hand, it's a reflection of the fact that we live in the state of Israel. It's no longer just Prague and Budapest and Vilna and local Chevra Kadishas. Of course, the Gemara is aware of this. The Gemara Moed Katan al Chavzayin talks about, I forget whom, Rav Huna came to a city and saw people working, and he wanted to excommunicate them because you're not supposed to work when there's a dead person in the town who has to be buried. And then when he hears that, I think the Lashon of the Gemara in Moed Katan is Chevros, Chevros, Ika. There are different parts of the city, and each part of the city has their own people appointed to bury the dead. So presumably the people that were working were not part of that group within which someone had died. And the people in that group, they were already supervising the burial. So the people that belonged to another group, they didn't have burial responsibilities, and therefore they could attend and they can work. So the Gemara implicitly is aware that it wasn't just happenstance and left for serendipity who's going to bury the dead person, but there were groups of people organized that were responsible to bury, and if you didn't belong to that group or you belonged to a different social demographic group, you weren't responsible and therefore you could work and you weren't included in the Isser to work when there was a person to be buried. Anyway, these are the sources for Chevra Kadisha. These are the sources for, in some places they're called Chevra Kadisha, in some places they were called actually Chesed Shel Emes societies. What were the Chevra Kadisha people involved in? Well, primarily the three stages of burying a dead person. The first stage is called Tahara. You may not have heard about it, But we don't just put a person into the grave, but we purify the body, a very, very intimate, difficult for some people experience. You have to actually deal with the body, clean the body, put the body into a mikveh. Obviously, males for males, females for females. The next step, and of course they occur simultaneously, is to dig the grave. And when one person's doing the tahara, another person's digging the grave, just to expedite the whole process. And to a certain degree, they were also involved in coordinating all the experiences of avelus, making sure there's food, making sure there are chairs, making sure, especially in the modern era, where it's more organized, they'll deliver the Aron HaKodesh, and they'll deliver the Sidurim, and they'll help the... And of course, in Chutz La'aretz, the Chevra Kadisha has that added responsibility, also on this end, to facilitate what in many cases is transporting the dead body from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, in cases in which the person is buried in Eretz Yisrael. But throughout history, people involved in the Chevra Kadisha were involved in a lot more than just these specific targeted aspects of burial. They became leaders of society. The Chevra Kadisha, they almost like surpassed their role as merely burial attendees and Tara performers. They became the council of the society. People looked to them for general guidance. And I'll talk about this, well, maybe I'll talk about this now. Whatever divisions occurred within Jewish communities, and divisions always occur in different shuls and different branches and chassidus and non-chassidus, typically in Europe, there was only one burial ground allocated for the Jews. So at some point, there had to be a convergence at the point of death. You had to work in solidarity and you had to work in harmony to bury dead people because you just weren't allowed to have different beis hakvaros. And chassidus was a little different, but certainly throughout the ages. So Chevra Kadisha became that vortex of solidarity, that you had to work together, and no matter what branch you belonged to, you were still buried by the same people. And to me, it was always a very beautiful sign of achdus, that despite the fact that people had different ashkafos and different drachim and different shuls and different yeshivos and different parts of the community, just practically, pragmatically, we had to work in unison for burial. And that, to a degree, is, of course, in Eretz Yisrael today, the same people end up burying chassid and non-chassid and dati lumi, secular. It has to be consolidated. You can't have 14 different arms burying different people because it will just become chaotic and disorganized. So beyond their role as those who buried, they played a role as general sages and councils of society. And of course, the government recognized this is one of the only Jewish bodies that the government recognized because the non-Jewish governments had vested interest in burying dead people. They didn't want bodies decomposing. So they would recognize and institutionalize the Chevra Kadisha as the leaders of the Jewish community. And the third level that Chevra Kadisha people were involved in was with general chesed. They ended up, I don't want to use this pun, I don't mean this in the bad way, it's just the only word I can think of, bleeding from, you know, into different areas of involvement, not just burying dead people, but helping out Yisomim and Almanos and running soup kitchens. So generally, you'll see the Chevra Kadisha being involved in Europe, not just in specific aspects of burial, but general issues of the community, and in particular, Gemilas Chasadim. So when you'll go back and you'll see in Europe, and you visit Europe, you'll find buildings that have engravings of the Chevra Kadisha or records of the Chevra Kadisha. You'll find they were involved in activities and interactions far beyond burial, tahara, and avelus. And that's why a very, very interesting document for historians, as well as just people that are generally interested in the emergence of Jewish communities, are called Pinkasei Chevra Kadisha. Every community had their records. They were called Pinkas Chevra Kadisha. And there are people that are studying these to find out how Jewish life evolved. Those of you who are going to Poland, you'll come across some of these buildings that were the Chevra Kadisha buildings. And they weren't just involved in Tahara. They were buildings that housed Jewish life in a very, very rich texture of activities. Okay? Now, it was a big schus to be appointed to the Chevra Kadisha. These were positions that were hotly contested. Today it's voluntary, and I'll talk about that in a few moments. But the rush already, in one of his tshuvos, Klal Yud Gimel, Simon Yud Gimel, quotes the fact that if a person dies and he was a member of the Chevra Kadisha, his son has the right to inherit his position. These were positions of prestige. To be appointed to the Chevra Kadisha meant that you were already seen and vetted, as we would say in the modern context, as a person who was worthy to lead the community. In fact, there are tshuvos that talk about if you were appointed to a Chevra Kadisha in Prague, and then you move to, I don't know, Budapest, can the people of Budapest assume you're Chevra Kadisha worthy because you were already vetted and examined by the people in Prague? So can we be someich on the people in Prague to have vetted you properly? And there was a certain age limit beneath which you couldn't be appointed. In fact, legendarily, the youngest person, as legend has it, that was ever appointed to the Chevra Kadisha was a person who was seen to be such a phenom that they could appoint him at the age of 10. Who was that person? The person who set the record for the youngest appointment, the youngest person to hit the 10,000 points in the NBA. The youngest person to ever be appointed to the Chevra Kadisha was a boy named Shneur Zalman, who lived in a town of Liadi, who then became the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. So he was, the Baal HaTanya was appointed at the age of 10 to be part of the Chevra Kadisha. Now, Chevra Kadisha would typically meet on 3 days during the year. These were the 3 days. Now Zayin Adar, Moshe's Yahrzeit, has been selected as the day. So today is Zayin Adar. Some communities celebrated the Chevra Kadisha on Lag BaOmer. Some communities, it was Tesvav Kislev or Chav Kislev. For whatever reasons, that was chosen. Tesvav Kislev can never occur on Shabbos. That was picked as a nice day right before Hanukkah. What would typically happen on a Chevra Kadisha celebration day? The people of the Chevra Kadisha would fast that day, so they'd be fasting today. They would typically go to the Beis HaKvaros and ask mechila from the people who they had buried. If you, by the way, just in general, if you hurt someone's feelings or commit an avera bin adam lachavero, and you don't have a chance to ask mechila from that person before they die, the Rambam paskins, you have to go to that person's kever with 10 people and ask for mechila. So it's not something you really want to do, although I know people that have done that. So you want to make sure your record's straight, you're not leaving anything on the table, as we say, in terms of bein adam lachavero. They would typically fast, they would go to the Beis HaKvaros and ask for mechila, and at the end of the day, they would have a big suda that the whole community would be invited to, and everyone would share. It would be a big festive celebration, the suda. You still have that today. In many shuls, you'll still have in Zayin Adar, the Chevra Kadisha will gather at night, someone will make a siyum or mishnayos. We generally don't publicize it because for whatever reasons, we don't want to make it a big public event. But you'll still have in many shuls on Zayin Adar a Chevra Kadisha ceremony and a suda for those people that have joined the Chevra Kadisha. And then, of course, each community had its own minhagim. One of the nice minhagim that I was always intrigued by, in one Hungarian community, the people of the Chevra Kadisha would go house to house of people that were avelim that year, or in general, and they would sing one portion of Yigdal. They would sing Yigdal, Yigdal Elokim Chai. Which portion do you think they would sing on Zayin Adar? It's like a very cute minhag. They would gather outside of everyone's house and just sing, one day your dead will rise, and one day HaKadosh Baruch will be Mechaya Mesim. And the minhag was to give them each an egg, and they would eat hard-boiled eggs. So these cute minhagim that differed from town to town. So my point is, I want you to be aware of the day. And one day, if it fits, and it may not fit for everyone, to me, one of the first questions you ask when you move to town is not where the ShopRite is or not where the local kosher pizza shop is, but anytime you move into a city, your first question should be, what chesed can I be involved in? You should never be a taker and not a giver. That's offensive. That's morally degenerate. If you're living in a community at any level, what are you giving to the community? You're taking so much. You're davening in a shul. You're part of a minyan. You have aliyos. You have tefillos. You have people around you. What are you contributing? Now, keep in mind, guys, that should start not just when you reach your final community. A lot of people say, well, I'm only here for a year or two, and then I'm going to move to Teaneck, and then I'm going to move here, and then I'm going to move to Eretz Yisrael. At any level, even for some of you starting next year or the year after when you're in college and you're trying to build a community in your local campuses, you have to be a giver. So find something to be involved in. I'm the Gabbai Shani, the Gabbai Shlishi, whatever. I help out Shela Shudis. I'm involved in adult education. It's super important always to be a donator and a volunteer, and not just the taker. And by the way, that's in families also. Families are also communities. When my children complain about taking out the garbage or cleaning up their rooms, I give them this lecture. Of course, I give it to them at a different level. So you're part of a beautiful family. You get so much, you have to contribute. One day, this is a very, very tender and beautiful area to be involved in. I tell you to wait a while. Don't join it when you're in your 20s. But certainly, again, depending where you are, if you live in a very small community, you may be forced to. I'm part of the Chevra Kadisha in Olam Shvat. I'm not really involved in the nitty-gritty details because it's a relatively younger community, so I'm like on standby if they need someone to make a hospital run or if they need some help bringing some chairs over. I'm not part of the grave digging crew or the Tahara crew, but I've transported bodies or at least been in an ambulance to help transport a body. So it's something that if you have the constitution, it's just a very healthy part of life to confront death and process your life with that. So, for example, I'll just give you two episodes or anecdotes. When I talk about boys your age in Israel, and I compare them to boys in America, and a lot of people ask me, what are the differences educationally? So in general, without sounding in any way arrogant or condescending, Israeli teenagers tend to be a little bit emotionally, not necessarily on a case-by-case basis, but trend to be a little bit more emotionally mature than their counterparts in Chutz La'aretz. And when I'm asked the reason, one of the reasons I say is because they've just confronted death at an earlier stage. Unfortunately, it's sad, but we live with death in Israel in a way that you're a little bit sanitized from in Chutz La'aretz. And that tends to create, I remember a long, long time ago, in 1995, the boys in yeshiva had a friend of theirs who had cancer in high school, and he wasn't coming to Israel. In fact, I remember giving him a bechina just symbolically to make him feel part of the process. Everyone knew he wasn't coming to Israel, but the Rebbeim asked that all the visiting teachers from Eretz Yisrael give him a bechina and maybe accept him to the yeshiva. Then at some point during their year or their second year, this boy passed away. I remember having to deal with the level of devastation that the boys were facing was a little bit, I won't say atypical, but it was more augmented than I felt Israelis. Israelis were able to process death a little bit differently. Whatever the point is, it's a healthy part of life to realize that it's not endless and it's not infinite, and people proceed towards the terminus, and then there's a next world, and not just to live the hilarity and the gaiety of life, but to realize there's a purpose for us on this earth and there's a terminus. Second point, I have a friend who was just recently appointed to be a rabbi in Manhattan, the new rabbi of Ramaz, but he was a friend of mine who was my chavrus in YU. I remember like 10, 12 years ago, Rabbi Steinmetz is his name, he put out the following blog. This was before people were recording, so he put it out as a text. It was Super Bowl Sunday, and it was gearing up to watch the Super Bowl, whatever, I remember, I forget which teams were competing. And then he got a quick call, and he had to attend to a levaya of an elderly woman in his community. I don't know if she was buried in Montreal where he was the rabbi, his whole day had been rerouted from watching sports to burying an elderly person. And he reflected upon how his day had changed, how he had planned to watch muscular men with no education, limited values, compete against each other physically, as opposed to celebrating the life of a woman who had lived charitably, philanthropically, raised a family, and how much more valuable and meaningful the day had become now that he was involved in Chevra Kadisha and escorting a woman to the next world rather than just simply watching people hit each other with helmets and shoulder pads. And so that sense of realizing the mortality, the frailty of the human condition, having a communal consciousness, being part of a larger group, not just finding a house and living by yourself and finding a minyan and davening, but being part of a living, breathing community of people who live together, who bury each other, who process their lives together. It's an important thing to think about. Obviously, it's not going to be in the next year or two or the next 10 years, but certainly when you find that first community that you settle into, this may be a chesed you want to ease your way into. And then certainly at the second and third level, when you're a little bit older, these are important things to think about. And if you're not involved, at least every year on Zayin Adar, to know that there is an important ceremony taking place and you're part of Jewish folklore. Chevra Kadisha, for the last 600-700 years, certainly since medieval Europe, have been dominant parts. Everyone knew who the people were. Everyone relied on them. Everyone celebrated their activity. So certainly to know that you're joining up with something so impressive and so legendary is something that not everyone's aware of, since I wanted to gather everyone and just give you that sense. Okay, well, we'll probably have shir tomorrow again. I have to check with Rabbi Friedman, but we'll probably have a quick shir, makaris and shir. Again, hopefully the visits will end soon, but we just have to carry our fair share of the responsibility. Okay? Shkach, everyone. Does anyone just out of interest, anyone have a father or mother who's involved in Chavak Kedisha?
By the way, there's a seat for all of them right now.
Thank you.
I'll send the recording. Shkach, guys, shkach. I have a good picture with your brother, the sperm cell. Is the deadline fast approaching, or we have to
deal with that?
But you got an extension?
We'll talk.
Okay.
What?
Okay, shkach, guys, come.
Would it be able to talk about...
Sure.
About? Shirim.
Sure.
I'm like...